So
we have an amazing formula that says that the dynamical zeta function is product over all prime cycles 1 minus tp. So what are we going to do with it? The suggestion is, as each tp is something that's proportional to, let's say, z to the np times other cycle weights we've just computed in time up to now. If z is small, we can expand it. So we can pick up this term. Then we can pick up all products of all prime cycles, so P1, P2, PK, of all k's. And then each one of them carries a minus sign, so there's a minus to the kth power. And then there's the product TP1, TP2, TPK. And we'll put here a little dash saying that they have to be different prime cycles, not the same ones. Now this combination is very frequent, so we will even give it a name, or other people gave it a name. It's called a pseudocycle. And we'll give it notation T pi equals 1 k plus 1 TP1 TP2 TPK. So it's concatenation of k different prime cycles, pseudocycle. And you'll see it's kind of almost a cycle model, as you'll see. So then we can write this formula in a slightly easier way, which is this had to be plus 1, because for one cycle there's a minus sign. And that's this minus sign. So you can write it as sum over all pseudocycles, which are all products of all possible prime cycles, in which each prime cycle shows up only once at most. So that's the form of this. And what does individual pseudocycle look like? It is a product. So it has this minus 1 to the k plus 1. Then downstairs, it has a weight, which is a product of stabilities, expanding parts of Jacobians of all cycles. And upstairs, it has this parameter beta, which we find convenient to manipulate observables, observable computed on a pseudocycle minus s, the period of the pseudocycle. And if you insist on having this discrete time zn, so the things that cut topological weight, you could also put here an n pi. And what are all these things? So lambda of the prime cycle is simply the product of lambdas, because that's what you'll inherit from here, p2 on pk. Observable of a prime cycle, is simply the sum. It shows up upstairs. So it's a sum of observable value on the first cycle plus observable value on the second cycle plus integrated observable evaluate on the case cycle the period of pseudocycle is just simply sum of the periods, because again it shows up additively upstairs, T1 plus TP2 plus TPK. And the topological length is just the sum of the lengths. Topological length is just a sum of the length of the first prime cycle, length of the second prime cycle, length to the p to the k. So that will help us a little bit with manipulation. We have a very condensed notation. Now, how do we really use this formula? Again, example is very helpful. And as always, we'll take our binary world. And if you remember, this binary dynamics is maybe a unimodal map. Dynamics are unimodal maps. So if you don't like maps, three-disk billiard has binary dynamics. It's a very physical thing. And in that case, we can write the zeta function explicitly as 1 minus the weight of fixed point 0, 1 minus the weight of fixed point 1, 1 minus the two-cycle weight of the two-cycle, 1 minus the weight of three-cycle, and so on. Now, as each cycle carries with it C to the n, or, you know, S, either way, S close to 0, or small z, whatever it makes you happier to think about analyticity of the series, it's very natural to order this Taylor, this infinite product in terms of product of ones in all of them, and then the product just of this cycle with ones elsewhere. So that's 2, 0. It's a minus sign. Or this one. So these two guys are length 1 topologically. So that's what distinguishes them. If you think of them as a Taylor expansion in Z small. Then this one multiplied by all the other ones. But then there is also a possibility of multiply these two guys and ones elsewhere. T0, T1. Then there's T1, 0, 0 minus T2 cycle, T1. And then we can go to the four cycles. And for example, there is a 1, 0, 0. That'll show up in the series. We can group the terms in such a way that that is what it comes with. And that's about it. There could be, well, you know, each prime cycle shows up only once, so that's the only thing that can happen. And so on. We can organize them this way. And if you expand this a little bit, you'll see that this can be mildly complicated. So, well, maybe I'll just write one more term. So if I look at T0011 cycle, there are 3-4 cycles. One of them looks like that. It'll show up shadowed by T001, 3 cycles times T1, minus T0, minus T0, T011, and then there'll be plus T T0, T0, 1, T1. And this goes on. So there is a natural grouping into combinations. And this natural grouping is something we already noticed when we were discussing the discounting. So when we're discussing the transition matrix, where the weight was simply 0, 1, and nothing so simple, multiplied by z to the length of a cycle. We already observed that there is a natural grouping. And depending on symbolic dynamics, see, there is a part of it that is not cancelled by anything. So there's always something which I'll call fundamental cycles. So we show for full binary dynamics that all these guys, at least in a 0-1 weighting limit, everybody else cancels. These are the only fundamental motion. I can go left and right, and everything else is combined from these things. Now, in general, because we are computing the cycle weights on particular periodic orbits, these lambdas are smooth functions, periods, every smooth function or something. So in general, this doesn't cancel because it's something that's evaluated at zero or on two shadows. In this case, they're quite far away. So these things don't cancel exactly, but they cancel to a large extent. And for that reason, one can separate this into a part which I'll call curvatures, Cn. So there is a part, for example, when we're looking at golden mean pruning, it turned out that one of these things was forbidden. So this was forbidden. So we got a different set of, we got 0 and 1, 0 as fundamental cycles. But the rest organizes into combinations of these shorter ones. So there is always a splitting when you have finite grammar into fundamental part. And corrections, which I'll call curvatures, maybe it's a badly chosen word, but they just look like they're measuring the deviations from all the weights being equal. So, curvatures. Or you call them whatever you want to call them. So that's the fundamental insight about chaotic dynamics. Yes, there are infinitely many periodic orbits. Yes, they're infinitely complicated. Yes, the number is growing exponentially. But when you look at zeta function, which we'll use to compute all long-term predictions of the theory, there'll be two parts of it. There's something that captures the important qualitative behavior. So on this side, I go that way and stretch. But on this side, I go stretch and I flip. So for a unimodal map, this is very qualitatively different. Even the sign of the Floquet multiplier is different. And everybody else is more or less a combination of these basic behaviors. And this is the main reason why we'll be able to, by computing short cycles, produce predictions for infinite cycles. Because these guys will capture, and these corrections, when the systems are nice, they'll be dropping off exponentially or super exponentially in cycle length. So we'll only need a finite number of this kind of shadow terms to make our prediction. So that's the basic idea. Now, suppose you do this. So you construct a zeta function. Constructing a zeta function means you have to find all periodic motions hierarchically ordered by their topological length. And for each one of them, you have to numerically compute the eigenvalues of its stability, its Jacobian. So the Floquet multipliers, of which this is just the expanding part, describe the stability of every solution. And then on each solution, you have to compute expectation values, so the average of whatever observable you're interested in on that solution. And you'll need to know also the period of each solution. So this information you have to compute. So there should be a table that has all the information that you need. And now, once you have it, you can compute cycles, prime cycles, weights, and pseudocycles. So what do you do with the first step? So I just want to point out something that's very convenient, and I find it surprising. You know, if there was no periodic orbit theory, I would not have a very concise way of stating it. And indeed, in literature, especially in quantum chaos literature, they have extremely clumsy way of stating this. So it's, you know, has somebody's name and it's somebody's sum rule, etc., and it's only asymptotically true. But here is what can happen. You might be able to evaluate your zeta function explicitly for specific values of this weighting parameter, either S or Z. And here's the simplest example. If you have confined flow, it is chaotic. But you're confined in some regions, so you're, you know, doing something complicated, and this is forbidden. Escape, no escape. So now we all discussed what escape rate is. It's a likelihood that you leave this region per unit time, and it's related to the leading eigenvalue of your evolution operator, and the zeros of zeta functions are supposed to be related to the eigenvalues, and the leading zero has to be the one that's related to leading eigenvalue, which is the escape rate. So if escape rate gamma, which is, you know, minus the leading eigenvalue, if this is zero, then the zeta function should be zero, the escape rate. Now, first of all, this is geometrical property of flow, so our observable will set beta equal to zero. We will not be computing any observables at the moment. And the leading eigenvalue means that my answer doesn't depend on TP. And I get this amazing rule that says that 1 over sigma, which is, you know, function of S, the dynamical zeta function at S equals 0, which is the sum over 1 minus all pseudocycles TP. Now the pseudocycle is extremely simple. It's a sum over minus all pseudocycles and just the weight of the pseudocycle survives. And I'm sorry, there's a minus sign because that's very crucial. Minus 1 to the k plus 1. So pseudocycles of all lengths. So this particular sum has to be 0. Now, in your calculations, you will always have a finite number of periodic orbits. So if you have a confined system, a flow in which you cannot escape, then you must check how good this sum is. And the way it works is that this sum is dominated by the short periodic orbits, because these guys grow exponentially with the period. So the short periodic orbits will make the biggest correction, contribution to this. And if I go to some order in cycle lengths, I will be making an error, and I can numerically estimate the error. So this sum rule has two purposes. Whenever you compute your periodic orbits and their stabilities, and you have a confined system, you must check how good the sum rule is. If the sum rule is very bad, it probably means you lost, you haven't found one of the short periodic orbits. Now, you know, if you lose one term in the sum for which instability is not very large, you're lost forever. So the first thing is you just have to make sure that what's going on is the meaning of this particular rule is that you have a state space and it's pierced by various periodic points. And each periodic point morally owns some neighborhood. And as we know, the size of the neighborhood is roughly 1 over, say this is periodic point in this cycle, the size of neighborhood should be roughly 1 over the period of this thing. And if we miss, so we're trying to densely follow the state space, the ergodic component of it, is the unstable periodic orbit. And if you miss somebody very early on, so we miss this whole region, then it doesn't really help that later on we'll find some periodic orbit that has this neighborhood, etc. So check this first. Now this is the crudest form of the sum rule. In actual calculation, you should really use spectral determinants. I'm using the zeta function for pedagogical purposes because it's easier to explain. But all calculations should be done in terms of spectral determinants because those, we have a good control of their convergence and they're much more convergent than zeta functions. Then, you know, there is a long song and story, so if you actually have to compute something, please read the material in the book explaining, in Carol's book explaining how you actually compute. The recommendation is don't use zeta functions in calculations. Tians. Compute the Fredholm determinant or spectral determinant 1 minus C over L, which is some sum 1 minus of some contributions. And the Chaos book says how. Read this. But, you know, conceptually it's not very important, so I will not cover it in the lecture. If you just read the material, you'll be fine. But this is amazing. The idea that you have a sum rule like this. This is probability conservation. Deterministic chaos, where there are no probabilities, everything is computable, but the ergodic set is divided in neighborhoods and a finite number of periodic points suffices to get an accurate calculation. This is the first check where we have them. Now the next interesting part, and very, yeah, this is probably the punchline of the whole set of lectures on cycle expansions, is how you compute now dynamical averages. So now I'll give you cycle formulas for, maybe I should, this is a big deal, so let me put it here. Cycle formulas for dynamical claim is that anything that you can measure at the long time, much beyond the Lyapunov time of your computation, so beyond what your theory can numerically compute in terms of individual trajectories, for any such observable, you'll be able to perform arbitrarily accurate dynamical computation. You know, the simplest observable, which you can do extremely well for simple systems like 3D system, is escape rate from a strange attractor, meaning the set of balls that bounce forever between three disks. But obviously their neighborhoods are constantly leaking out. And that will be able to compute to ridiculous accuracy, maybe 100 digits, if you care to do that accurately, whereas any numerical averaging will give you a few digits, like three significant digits for the escape rate. And of course, experiments will not be able to measure 100 digits, but it just enables you to understand the convergence properties of this cycle expansion formulas for the averages, and it enables you to understand how this stuff works. So now, when we discussed averages, first thing that we know is that all these formulas, be it the zeta function or determinant, which I've erased again, they all have the form that there is some function. That function depends on your fake temperature parameter beta, which we'll use. It's a dual parameter to the averages you want to compute, and it's just used as intermediate thing in calculations. And the parameter, if we solve the equation that this is zero, so for every parameter beta, there is a value of S which computes the leading eigenvalue, and that's a leading zero of either F being fed from the terminal or maybe topological zeta function or some trace formula or some version of the periodic orbit theory. We will find some curve that satisfies this condition. Now this curve has a special value for beta equals zero. This is beta. Beta zero, beta some other value. And this is S. And this curve is for given beta, the leading zero of my Fredholm determinant or my evolution operator. There is a special value in which we are looking at F of zero, S of zero. And we have shown you in previous lectures that the derivative of this function, so there is a d f ds evaluate the slope will yield me dynamical observables. So it'll give me expectation values of various averages. So observable, let's say the temperature on the third floor Howey lab, and expectation value what happens if I measure it 100 times an average. So we would like to compute not just where the zero is, but we also need the first derivative. And if you're interested in how transfer coefficients are, do it in the notes in the book, but not in this lecture. You will be also interested in higher derivatives here. They're related to 2-point, 3-point correlations, etc. So now, because this function is zero, its derivative must be zero. So we have that zero is full derivative. Let's do it as a function of beta, for example. But in terms of partials, this is because f depends on beta explicitly. So there is partial with respect to beta. Plus, it depends implicitly through the other parameter, ds. ds d beta. And that gives me a formula that says ds d beta. So my leading eigenvalue, which you have shown already, is expectation value of my observable. It's minus partial of my determinant with respect to parameter divided by the partial of my determinant or zeta function or whatever with respect to S. And I will call these two quantities see, when I take a derivative of my weight with respect to beta, I'm bringing down the observable. So I'll call it expectation of observable. And the precise form of that will depend on my precise form of the function that I'm finding zero off and slope. So let me just denote it by the function. And if I take derivative of with respect to S, I'll bring down the periods. So let me denote the result of this as t to the f. So you can see that with this quantity is, this has been time integral or observable on all periodic orbits. Weighted will do it for a dynamical zeta function first. Weighted by particular formula we are using to compute, divided, so this has dimensions of observable times time, divided by the average time. So dimension, this is a correct thing, it has a dimension of the observable. What's totally unexpected and could not ever be guessed from studying physics of letters and kind of arguments you find there, is the form of these two things. So we have our formulas for pseudocycles still on the blackboard, so I can be very explicit. So let's just do it if F is dynamical zeta function. So we have I over sigma that depends on beta, on this dual parameter to our observable. And then it depends on S, but through beta, if you wish, because you'll be interested in leaving zero this particular curve. And now what are these partial derivatives? So if I take dd beta of just partial, the only dependence on beta is in AP. So it'll get down some minus, you know, this goes away in the partial. Minus 1, k plus 1, and then pi, but this is the number of terms in a product of pi, and this brings down a to the pi, and then we set, after we take the derivative, it takes s equal to 0, beta equals to 0, so this exponent goes away. And I find out that this is our average quantity computed on all pseudocycles, weighted by the stability of the pseudocycle. And DDS of the same quantity, because the time shows as a minus sign here, this becomes plus sum over all pseudocycles minus 1 k plus 1, and then derivative brings down the period tp over the weight p, and this is why I call this thing's expectation value of a. So it's a computed on all configurations, weighted by the cycle expansion for zeta function, in this case. So I'll call this zeta. And this is expectation value of mean time. So basically, you know, time you get someplace computed by sigma. So for binary example, we know the cycle expansion, so we can just write them down. And we get that A is computed or observable on a fixed point, a fixed point 0, divided by stability of the fixed point, plus computed on the other fixed point, divided by lambda 1 stability of that fixed point, plus computed on the 2 cycle, divided by the 2 cycle, minus Now, remember these guys add in pseudo cycles minus computed on one cycle, fixed point computed on the other fixed point, and multiplied by the weight of each one of them. Plus, same thing for three cycles. And our expectation, our observable A, is the ratio of these two sums. So you have a sum here, which starts with shortest cycles, which are least unstable. So I get the largest contribution from them. So do computation on each one of them. Then I add to this the correction from the two cycle. And now you can see that A1, A2, and this goes on, divided by time of the first period. So if this is a Poincaré section, there will be non-trivial return map. Time of the other one, also non-trivial return map. If it's discrete map, this will be just once. Plus correction. And computing the time of two cycle minus estimating it by, this is the sum of the two fixed point return times. This one divided by the two cycle. And the correction being weights of individual periodic orbits. Stabilities, etc. The main thing to notice about the cycle formulas for dynamical averages that they have the same structure as the cycle formulas for expansion of zeta function of Fredholm determinant. They're dominated by short periodic orbits because, you know, these lambdas are typically, let's say, of order 2 each. And the value of your observable in the neighborhood of the fixed point. But then there's a correction in which you compute your observable on the, by integrating it over the cycle. Now, this is longer, so it's exponentially more unstable. So if this was 2, this would be of order 4, let's say. But then it's shadowed by your estimate of what observable would have been on each periodic orbit. So we again have shadowing. So if the original expansion for periodic orbits was converging, this is going to converge as well. So now I won't do very much more on this. I suggest you read the book. Let me just do two nice things that might puzzle you. One is, I keep telling you always, reduce the symmetry, reduce the symmetry. In particular, never work in continuous time flow, but always work in Poincaré section or set of Poincaré sections. Now, I just gave you some formula. And it looks like this formula is different if I'm using continuous time. You know, it's dimensionally different. Because in discrete time, this is n. This is an integer. In continuous time, and this is a sum. In continuous time, this has dimension of time, and this is integral over time, so this proportional to time. So, you know, it just looks different, scales different, etc. So if I'm working in Poincaré section, and I find something, for example, escape rate or some average, how is that related to what I really care about, this average in continuous time? Do I have to recompute it? You know, do I have to do all the averaging again using continuous time? Well, there's an incredibly simple relation. So if I compute A in continuous time, then what I'm doing is I'm computing my expectation. Now this calculation doesn't care about the time, it's just whatever I use to compute my expectation value. And in continuous time I'm doing this divided by average over the times weighted by stability of the orbits. If I compute the same thing in discrete time, then the expectation value of A is the same, but now I have to compute discrete times here, which means in these formulas, wherever time appears, there should be an integer. But you know, I just look at these formulas and I realize there's a very simple relation. A in discrete time is the same as A in continuous time, which is the thing we care about in our physical expectations, times the ratio TF over over N computed with my formulas. So this guy's removes divided by time, and this makes it the correct formula. So all you need to know is compute this once. That's a calculation, you have to do it. Because you know, different system can have wildly different averages over continuous time as opposed to discrete times, which is just counting how you come back. So that's a calculation. But once you have computed it, then you know how to relate all discrete calculations to continuous discrete, just by this ratio. That's very cute, and I would not in 1,000 years be able to sit down, you know, guess the form of this answer and publish it as Fizeroff letters. You know, this is any guess that you would like to make that's kind of Fizeroff letter quality or lack of quality, it would be always on the level of trace formula. It would be always on the level of averaging over things in time, etc. So for example, the probability conservation that's so beloved by quantum chaos of that kind, you make some trace average and you look what it does in a long-term limit. Cycle expansions are really brilliant in a same sense the determinants are smarter than traces because they have this minus signs. So what cycle expansions build automatically is if you have computed some cycles up to given length, from them you have an estimate what the next contribution will be for a longer cycle. You can use the pseudo combination saying that you know, the long cycle is doing something like that. My short cycles are not quite doing it, so they're recurrent. So what short cycle is, long cycle is doing is it's being this unstable, so you come close, you get kicked away. Then you come close to another short cycle, but it's unstable, so you follow it for a while, you get kicked away, and you get kicked away in precisely such a way that you keep repeating this. So you are being pushed away by the both, so somehow interpolated between the both. But to be close to them at any time, you know, this has to be very small, this distance. because this is exponentially unstable, to stay for some time t, you know, it will explode. So for a significant part of your trajectory, very close to a shorter periodic orbit, and A is computing a shorter periodic orbit, and the other one is computed, A12 is computed on some of the both. And it's only in this regime, which happens rather quickly, because, you know, once you're exponential away, you gotta get exponential close to this guy, that they differ. And for that reason, the shadowing is going to be very good whenever you have a smooth flow. So I still have a little bit of time in this lecture. I'm illustrating all this by giving you, you know, binary dynamics, which is a very simple dynamic. Everything is possible, but, you know, if you go this way, you're slightly different stability than go other way, and the periods are different, etc. This is obviously in a three-disc system. For example, in three-disc system, the shortest periodic orbit is like that, and that's also least unstable. It has three copies, but we know how to use group theory to make it into one. And this guy is longer, and it turns out, you know, to have slightly different stability and slightly different period, because they're all moving with velocity one, so this period is a little bit longer, by some square roots of three and God knows what, some. But, you know, it's not so bad, the shadowing. So shadowing might work pretty well. Now, what happens for prune dynamics? So what happens if you have a finite alphabet? In that case, what you do is you first go through the discussion that we had for transition matrices. So first, transition matrices gave you T of P is either Z to the n P or zero, so the if admissible. And then, whenever you're given the finite grammar, you were able to write the finite graph. So, finite grammar. Things like saying that three repeats of zero are forbidden, you know, so prune blocks. And maybe there'll be some weird thing that's 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, 0 that's forbidden. And there is a finite list of them. Whenever you have a finite grammar, you learn how to draw a finite graph. So something that, you know, depended on our alphabet. And it told us what all admissible walks in a graph is. And then for every finite graph, we know how to write the topological zeta function in terms of interstitial itinerary. So that of 1 minus topological zeta function or something. It was 1 minus t0 minus t0011, etc. There's some list of these guys. And this part, unless you've accounted for all of them in computing your averages, you have not accounted for fundamental behavior. You know, what is it that you need to just topologically be right in counting? So this part will be the fundamental cycles. As you remember, these are all non-self-intersecting walks on the graph. If they're non-self-intersecting and if they share no points, then they have no shadowing. So they have the same role as the two fixed points in the binary case. But it'll be more complicated. And you know, it might turn out that you need to include a very well-defined set of cycles up to length 7, maybe. And that will capture the roughest qualitative behavior on any average that you want to compute. And then everybody else, by definition, are walks which are this type. So you have a walk in which you share in your dynamics some node, and you can go through this node either shorter cycle or by a longer cycle, which is concatenation of the shorter ones. And these are the guys which will give you the shadowing contribution. So the theory will work like that. And then I have to finish with bad news. You know, like in old textbooks, we tend to romanticize. I can't help it. It was easiest to explain everything on unimodal map and on the three-disk system. But whenever you try to solve a real physical problem, you'll find that this grammar is infinite. Almost always. Now, what does that mean? That means that as I look more and more carefully, more and more time steps back, every so often I find some weird thing that's inadmissible. And that has to do with the fact that my Hamiltonian, my dynamical system, my PDE or something, has some number of continuous parameters. And it's impossible to adjust all these parameters in such a way that the grammar that they correspond to is perfect. You know. So there will always infinite number of, but after you capture the main ones, it may be very long, these other inadmissible sequences. So the graphs will never be finite. And there is even worse news than that. Usually, this is a typical situation when we start working in more difficult problems like fluid dynamics, you know, quantum field theory, blah, 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 in high dimensions. We are actually totally clueless about symbolic dynamics. So all these nice examples I gave you labeled by zeros and ones, a set of letters, we usually don't have no clue what these letters are supposed to be. So what happens if I don't know anything? No qualitative dynamics. Now, I don't know what the smiley for this is, but it's some expression like this. This is very typical. In that case, we have to be at least sure that we have found all the shortest periodic solutions. And if I found all the shortest periodic solutions we haven't missed them, then we can do something that we call stability ordering. So, you know, the situation is that we have our, let's say, zeta function being equal to 1 minus sum of all pseudo-orbits. But there is a finite number. So we have generated a list of p1, p2, to some pk, and we do not know how we're supposed to label them, but we know their stability, and we know the observable we are interested in computed on that periodic orbit, minus the period of that periodic orbit. So we have that list. Then our intuition is that what's important when you're computing averages, you know, averages usually are something that's not very violent. So when I'm integrating some observable on a loop, it'll be roughly mean value of that observable times the length of the loop, which is the period. So these guys are not expected to behave much worse than the periods themselves. But these guys are falling off exponentially. So what we can do is we can write this as a sum of these guys, but only allowing lambda of the pseudo-orbit smaller than lambda cutoff. In other words, we include, if there is shadowing, if, you know, we don't have symbolic analysis, maybe some of these guys shadow very nicely, but this rule will include everybody who is shadowing, because if our lambda cutoff is this, then, you know, this combination will show up, because there will be pseudocycles that are shorter. And we hope for the best. So try different, you know, lambda cutoff. Lambda cutoff has to be smaller or equal, presumably equal is natural, of your most unstable cycle. And that's something that's going exponentially with the period of the orbits. So you hope that this is as good as it gets, at least with exponential error in time. So you hope that this is as good as it gets with the error of order of e to the minus Lyapunov exponent, so the mean expansion rate times your cutoff orbit, something like that. Now, what you really do is you look carefully what observable you're interested in, what the convergence is, and, you know, you might find out maybe it's not important to keep track of stability, maybe it's very important to keep track of time. This requires some thought. But the message is that even when you don't have control, which we assume so far, of topological dynamics of your problem, and you don't know how to systematically, hierarchically organize it and put periodic points in all neighborhoods and ensure that you have optimal shadowing up to given resolution or, you know, given number of steps in time, you can do a very good calculation nevertheless. So this is all, when you start computing periodic orbits and you start making corrections and predictions in terms of periodic orbit theory, there's a whole bunch of tricks which are in this book, but they're not really interesting. They're just, you know, experientially good ways to proceed about calculation. So this is it. Now we have cycle expansions. So we figure out how to herd cats. We just let them run. But the really important cats are the recurrent cats. They're called periodic orbits. So we capture all those and we track the trails, and we capture all those which have come back after a certain number of nights, you know, the discrete time recurrence. And for each one of them, we have deterministic dynamics, so we can compute everything we need on that one. And now we have formulas that tell us how to compute expectation values of something that happens in infinite time from short time dynamics. And these formulas are totally non-intuitive in the sense that I do not, the reason why the course is taking so long to get to cycle expansions, I do not know any hand-waving way to give you these formulas. The hand-waving waves give you just stupid formulas because they don't include shadowing. So they're good enough to publish in PhysRev where you publish log-log plots, but shadowing is actually, you know, exponentially, super exponentially better. So it's qualitatively totally different game. And now, you can ask yourself a few questions. Does it work? How well does it work? Why does it work? And can we do something with it? So I'll try to go to applications rather quickly.